thank you all, and I appreciate for the opportunity to speak. My name is Stu Herbert, and I'm really excited about running for hospital commissioner. I'm a Pacific Northwest native, and I moved to Port Ludlow with my wife 9 years ago, and we love it there. More intentionally, we've decided to raise two young boys here, and we have a 6 and 3 year old that I just adore. As a father, I'm deeply invested in the future of our community. And I've also been looking for a way to get more involved in our community, give back, be of service, and put what I believe is a pretty unique skill set to use. My professional background is in finance and organizational problem solving. I've worked a lot in commercial banking, and for the last 8 years been a partner of a small financial services firm that works primarily with family farms in Eastern Washington and helping them to navigate challenges around generational change and financial recovery. The agricultural market in Washington looks very similar to the healthcare landscape that we're experiencing. And as such, I believe that I'm uniquely positioned to complement the board with my experience. I was introduced to the hospital quite some time ago, fortunately, through my wife, Hillary Whittington. She served as the chief financial officer and chief administrative officer for 9 years for Jefferson Healthcare, and she's been gone now for about 5, moved on in her career. But what that's done is provide over a decade of dinner room conversations about not just Jefferson Healthcare, but healthcare in general, and our national healthcare policy, and what the healthcare landscape looks like. The big reason that I got involved in the race and want to serve on the board is because I truly believe that all of the majority of challenges that our hospital district are going to face are going to be financial in nature. And I think we're starting to see that already. We're seeing decreases in reimbursement, increased regulation, and we're seeing increased expenses for hospitals. And it creates a really different environment than what we've operated in over the last 10 years. I believe that Jefferson Healthcare has done a really good job being a financial steward and protecting them, having a strong financial position, but yet also growing services and access for our community in ways that our community needs. With all of that said, I also believe that an organization can only risk as much as its core financial position allows it. And to explain how that relates with Jefferson Healthcare and our public hospital district, the hospital has done a really good job of remaining financially sound. And what that's allowed it to do is to bring on more risk. And that risk really comes through in creativity, which drives access for our community. So if we think about it, by having a strong financial position, the hospital's been able to do some amazing things like the 55,000 square foot expansion, replacement building and expansion, getting into a retail pharmacy and opening that up, the Port Ludlow Clinic that's been opened in the last 5-6 years, or even getting into down-based care in essentially a hospital clinic setting, which is extremely problematic for hospitals from a repayment standpoint, but yet they've been able to do it and been a leader in the state in providing that. So all of those things induce risk to the business, but yet the business has been able to induce that risk because they've been financially strong, and it drives access for our community. My objectives, if elected, are pretty straightforward. First off, as I've been talking, I want to make sure that the hospital remains financially sound, secular, and independent. And I believe that those are all things that resonate with our community. I also, though, want to continue to remove barriers to access and solve barriers to access for our population, but specifically for our younger families and for our aging adults. Our younger families provide the vibrancy for our community, and they're the ones that are going to step into our shoes as leaders in the community in the future. But also, we need to ensure that our aging adults have the ability to age in place with grace and enjoy the benefits of the community that they've helped to build. I'm also really focused on ensuring that Jefferson Healthcare remains both an excellent place to work, but also the best place to practice medicine in the region. And we're gonna need that because we need the ability to attract talent to the hospital and to grow as we are. But we also need to make sure that we're retaining our staff and developing the skills of our staff and promoting internally whenever we're able to. Because at the end of the day, our staff is really our most valuable resource at Jefferson Healthcare, and without them, access to care means nothing. I would say lastly, I am focused on increasing the transparency and the professionalism of the board. I think that the board has a wide variety of skill sets that I complement, but I would say that a board shouldn't have consensus. That's not a sign of a healthy board. Disagreement is a sign of a healthy board. But we need to make sure that we resolve those disagreements in a professional manner, and we don't do so in a way that jeopardizes or disparages the staff, the hospital, and the reputation of the hospital within our public. I believe that our public institutions work better when they're working together. I also believe that it's the role of a commissioner who's publicly elected to be the conduit between what the board and the hospital is doing and what the public's goals are and the public's input. That is the role of being a publicly elected official in a job like this. To that point, I've spent a lot of time this summer connecting with other institutions or public institutions in our community that have relationships with the hospital. So that includes meeting with city and county government, meeting with law enforcement and fire chiefs, meeting with superintendents, meeting with other executive directors. And my goal in doing so has really been two things. One, asking them what is the relationship with the hospital from their perspective, so I can learn that. But also two, asking them where are there opportunities to remove friction or to collaborate. And what I found is, one, everybody has pretty good relationships in our community, and I think that's something that we kind of come to expect, and that's not a surprise. But the other thing that I found is that there's all these really neat ideas that are sitting on the sideline, and what they really need is they need an advocate or a champion to bring them forward. Are all of them going to work? No, that's just not the reality of it. But some of them probably will. And the ones that don't are going to drive really fun and interesting conversations that ultimately are going to lead to access for our community. At the end of the day, I believe that I understand what is at stake here, which is our ability to preserve our way of life that we enjoy and to live in this remote, beautiful, yet rural part of the state. I believe that healthcare is something that everybody should have access to, regardless of age or circumstance. And I'm running to ensure that the hospital remains financially sound so that generations to come can continue to build their lives here. Thank you.
Thank you, Stu. Okay, man. Consider staying, whatever you'd like to do.
I'm giving my 10-minute intro now.
Yeah, or less.
Or less.
All right, well, thank you all for being here. I've written out my statement because I want to be really specific. 12 years ago, I ran for hospital commissioner as an activist for healthcare. And oh, let me just start a timer to make sure I don't go over.
He takes it.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
That's why I'm here.
I ran for hospital commissioner as an activist for healthcare access for all. Since then, I've pushed the board to improve the quality of its deliberation, listen to patients and employees, champion universal healthcare, and keep our community health at its center. Along the way, I've been at the heart of two major controversies, both rooted in transparency and the public's right to know. Soon after taking office in 2014, I began recording our board meetings so that we could learn from every word. But the CEO and the commissioners then in office fiercely opposed it. It took 9 years, the arrival of two new commissioners, Culp and McComas, and a legal opinion that the CEO had withheld from the board for 5 years to confirm what I had argued all along, that commissioners and citizens have the right, the absolute right, to record our public meetings without any interference. Because we live in a country where the people have a right to know and our elected leaders and what our elected leaders are talking about. Today, the board records all on-site meetings, but it still refuses to record our off-site meetings, which often go 6 hours or more, so I record those myself at my own expense. The long fight over something as basic as recording meetings, preserving an accurate, truthful record of our board deliberations, exposed a deep hostility to transparency and set the stage for the next crisis, the Peninsula Health Alliance, which I'm sure some of you have heard about. On February 5th of this year, the Jefferson Healthcare Board went into executive session, citing the real estate exemption of the Open Public Meetings Act. But instead of real estate, we were shown a plan to form a private nonprofit corporation, the Peninsula Health Alliance, with CEO Mike Glenn as administrator and a 12-member super board with 7 seats for OMC and 5 seats for Jefferson, giving Clown County instant majority control. When I asked the CEO if he was seeking board approval, the CEO said yes. And one by one, the other commissioners showed their support. It was, unfortunately, an illegally held deliberation and an illegal straw poll taken outside of public view. At a second executive session, the CEO described a strategy of eventually releasing this proposal to the public, but only after Jefferson and OMC had agreed in principle to proceeding with it. He called this strategy setting up a binding, non-binding agreement. And the hospital attorney present at that meeting gave advice on how to accomplish this neat trick. In the weeks that followed, I warned my colleagues the session and the process was unlawful and unlawfully hidden from the public. My own attorney and legal research indicated we were getting seriously flawed legal guidance from the hospital attorney, who said it was okay to hide these talks under the guise of real estate discussions. They dismissed my concerns and refused to seek a simple second legal opinion. At the same time, the CEO and other board members publicly denied the proposal existed and insisted that the February 5th session was indeed only about real estate, which was blatantly false. I would not be complicit in deceiving the public over such a sweeping proposal. So, after careful and stressful, painstaking deliberation, I filed a criminal complaint with the sheriff, and I reported the violations to the state auditor, and I reported the advising attorney to the Washington State Bar Association. At the March 26 meeting, I told the public what was happening, and the chair cut off my microphone twice, once during public comment. Now, can you imagine our city mayor cutting off the microphone of a city council member during their allotted time to speak as a representative of the people? If our meetings were not recorded, then you may have never heard about this, and this abuse of power may have just succeeded in keeping this whole process secret. But thankfully, the Port Townsend leader listened to our meeting recordings, sometimes. They investigated this and they broke the story. The sheriff later concluded that the board had likely violated the OPMA, the State's Open Public Meetings Act. And I want to sincerely thank Port Townsend leader and Sheriff Andy Pernsteiner and Detective Derek Allen for their thorough and professional investigation into this matter. That is how the press and other institutions are supposed to work to support the integrity of one another. Now, it was only after the press exposed the proposal did the CEO and other commissioners admit it existed, claiming secrecy was required by a non-disclosure agreement. But a non-disclosure agreement is a private corporate tool. It's not a shield for public officials. It cannot override a public hospital district's duty of transparency. It is the law that defines the public's right to know. Two CEOs cannot just get together, sign a piece of paper, and suddenly public records are no longer public records, which is what our CEO and the board seem to be claiming. This entire situation continues to need a thorough, impartial analysis by the institution of Jefferson Healthcare internally, so that the board and CEO can learn from it. What went wrong, why, and how can we avoid a mess like this in the future? But the board refuses to hire an independent attorney instead letting the CEO investigate with lawyers he employs and pays with our tax dollars. But even those lawyers, however biased, they could not dispute what multiple outside attorneys have found, that the February 5th session indeed broke the law. It was not about real estate at all. The CEO and board now claim that they have a new legal memo by one of the new CEO-controlled and employed lawyers that drafts and answers every question that I'm raising about this non-disclosure agreement. But I have that memo, I've read it, that claim is not true, and the board and CEO refuse to just release the memo to the public so you can read for yourselves and see what's going on. Now, could an alliance such as the Peninsula Health Alliance be a good idea? Absolutely. But as this one was crafted, it was dangerous. It was a step towards corporate secrecy, replacing democratic oversight. In such a structure, a single vote of that board could have taken decisions out of public view. Ideas this powerful and significant must face public scrutiny from the start. And really, with a little forethought, we could have easily found a path to do that with this proposal. Jefferson Healthcare is one of the most important institutions in our county. It provides incredibly high-quality patient care. And the concerns I've raised are not about our doctors, nurses, or staff. They're about the governance at the top. Public hospital commissioners must lead with integrity, understanding that a public institution is not a private corporation. They must hold their CEOs accountable, evaluate them, the CEO, in meaningful ways, such as using the best practice of a 360 evaluation. And they must rely on independent counsel to resolve controversies such as this quickly, openly, and fairly. Transparency is not a burden to escape with legal maneuvers or backroom deals. It is the foundation of democracy. Transparency is the sunlight that protects us all from the abuse of power. I stand by my record, and if reelected, I will continue to serve with honesty, integrity, and thoughtfulness as your hospital commissioner. Looking forward, my priority is clear: keep our hospital locally controlled, financially stable, and always focused on the health of our community. And if you would like to learn more or actually listen to some of these board meetings that I've been describing, there's recordings on my website, readyforhealthcare.org. So I would just say, remember, when we shine the light into our public institutions, we don't weaken them. We make them worthy of the trust they hold. Thank you.
Okay, so what we're going to do is just take, we'll try to take 5 minutes here, and they can ask at least one question from each other, okay? So, Stu, would you like to ask a question of Matt?
Yeah, that's fine. I guess, Matt, what I ask is how do you address that your basis of fact is very different, I think, than what the other board members and the executive team have come out. They've at the last couple of board meetings, they've discussed it. They've discussed it in the leader. Around some of the items like the structure of the board and giving away our governance, essentially. Because I think that our executive team and our board's competent enough that they wouldn't structure something that would give away our control.
Can I interject for just one moment? Deborah, can you hear back there? People need to speak up a little more.
I can hear
more?
Pretty well.
Okay.
Pretty well. Okay, so, no, that's fine.
More,
I think she heard you pretty well, but
more,
just to remind
more,
you
more,
okay,
more.
Sorry.
To yep. Speak up. And maybe even stand up when you're speaking,
well,
so that people can read your lips.
And also, if you want to sit up here, you can sit here or over here if you'd like to.
Okay.
There you go.
Great.
I can
move.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
Okay. Sorry about that, Stu.
No, no, that's okay.
No, that was fine.
If you read the proposal that's been published, it says the board would be a super board. It would have 7 seats for OMC and 5 for Jefferson. And it says that board would select an administrator for the organization, and that administrator would run it. So it seems that that's what the proposal says. It says 7 for them, 5. It doesn't actually specify any decision-making process beyond that. Do you have an
Well, I guess.
Have you read the book?
Yeah, no, I've read the whole proposal. I guess it's my understanding is it was a document that was provided to OMC to outline the structure, but it's not. It was part of a presentation, and it wasn't something that was fully developed yet. And so I guess I struggle because it seems like the insinuation is that there's, whether it's malfeasance or incompetence, I have a higher expectation of our board. And I think it's disingenuous to pull that piece out when the executive team has addressed that specifically and the other boards address that specifically. And yet it continues to be a point that continues. And I guess I'm struggling to understand how you rectify that piece.
Yeah, I was just going by what the proposal I was given. That's what it says, 7 seats for OMC and 5 for, I agree it seems a bad idea. Like, I don't think, I mean, if we'd had a public discussion, I think one of the first things we would have said was, why does this say 7 seats for OMC, 5 for us? That looks like it's giving OMC a majority. And the thing that they've said is there has been other discussions they had behind the scenes that they say corrected it. They've said there's agreement to make it a supermajority for decision making, but I'm not even clear what that would have meant. Would that, how many votes? I don't know what the decision making structure is that they said they agreed behind the scenes. So yeah, I'm just going by what the proposal I was given. It says 7 and 5, which is, yeah, it looks absurd to anyone that looks at it. Why would we make it unbalanced like that? But
yeah, I guess I think that there's a context that's been communicated, and it's kind of like pulling a PowerPoint presentation, reading a PowerPoint presentation without having a presentation. And so I'm trying to understand why that continues to be a talking point when it seems fairly resolved that the document was obviously premature for public consumption. It wasn't prepared in that manner, and that there's that it was part of a larger delivery of the proposal to OMC. And I don't want to get into the specifics of litigating it, but it seems to be a lot of items like this that there's a direct conflict with what the hospital has said and what the existing board has said publicly and what you're claiming. And so I'm trying to understand how those are rectified, if that makes sense.
Okay. Can we go to the next one?
It's my turn to ask a question.
Yeah.
Well, we kind of talked about one of the questions.
Okay.
If when there's a serious disagreement on the board about the legality of the CEO's actions, should the board hire an independent attorney to advise, or should it simply rely on lawyers that are hired and employed by the CEO?
I guess it would depend on the circumstance. I don't have any problem with having an outside attorney. I also, though, would, I guess, trust that any attorney that the hospital has retained is not going to risk their professional reputation and livelihood for what would be, in the scheme of things, a rather minor engagement from their perspective. It seems like the hospital has done a lot of hiring attorneys that are competent. I'm not opposed to engaging an outside attorney if there's cause for it.
Okay. All right. Now we'll take questions from Rotary members first. Who wants to be first with a question?
Rick.
To both of you. Do either one of you want to fire the CEO? Oh, Jefferson Healthcare.
I can go first. At this point in time, I don't have any reason I see to fire the CEO. That is a core function of the job of a commissioner is governance, and it's to hire and fire their one employee, which is the CEO, and manage them. As long as the Board of Commissioners doesn't get involved in operations, they stay at governance, they set the policy and the direction of the organization, and they delegate the operation to the CEO. So as long as the CEO is operating the hospital district in alignment with what the board has laid out for direction, the strategic plan and governance, No, I don't. If that changes, or if there's an issue that's of concern, then yeah, that's absolutely a conversation that I think is warranted in having.
And no, I just want the board to be professional and thorough in how it evaluates the CEO and how it deals with things like this. When you have a problem, like a crisis, a huge controversy like this, you need to do a really objective, impartial, internal review. The public doesn't need to be involved. You need to see what happened, why it happened, and how can you prevent it from ever happening again. And I mean, I'm disappointed that the commissioners and the CEO haven't done that. But I will continue to push for, I think, how we should proceed, how we should try to resolve things.
Next question. Yes, sir, Paul.
As a Port Townsend resident, why should the population of Port Townsend support this combination of the two hospitals when it basically cedes control to the other one, despite this mirage of a supermajority needing to do something? Could you help me as to why I should be enthusiastic to allow this to occur?
Okay, so
you want me to go first?
Yeah, sure.
Okay,
So if you're talking about the Peninsula Health Alliance I was describing, it is no longer on the table. It's apparently not being considered anymore. Okay. So that's one thing to be clear
about.
Thank you. And I didn't think it was a good idea, so I'm not going to give you any reasons why we should have pursued it. I wasn't clear on why it was a good idea. So I guess, is that enough of an answer for anything?
That's good.
Yeah, so just to add on, I would say that a couple of things. One, from my understanding of it, it did not cede control. It was an alliance that kept the hospitals independent, with their own independent hospital districts and their own independent boards and decision making. The assets could be worked collaboratively. There could have been opportunities for sharing and expense savings. I think the details of that and the benefits are unfortunately largely lost through the result of how the process played out. What I would say, though, is as a Port Townsend resident, we are deeply vested in the interest of OMC's health. 25% of our current emergency department volume is coming from Clallam County. So the counties are really a dotted line, despite taxing districts. And we have a lot of patients that go from here over to SWIM and for treatment. So it's something that we need to be concerned about. I don't believe that it was a fiscal alliance. It was an opportunity to provide expertise and knowledge transfer. And I would say that Jefferson Healthcare is really good at running a critical access hospital. We're one of the leading critical access hospitals in the state. When 70% of all hospitals in Washington are losing money, we've been able to maintain a 2.2% average operating margin over the last 5-6 years. So, whether it plays out, what the exact benefits are, I don't know, but we should be concerned with OMC and we should be deeply vested in their health as well, because at the end of the day, this peninsula is all one just big area.
Could I make a clarifying point?
Yeah.
What I asked was, why was the structure fundamentally ceding control?
Oh, I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
You had 7 and 5. I've done hundreds of millions of dollars of mergers and combinations of organizations. In not one of those did the leading organization ever cede control to the one who needed more help. Yet that's how you've structured this.
Well, I think that's I think that's only structured from the board count. So what it was the start from the way I understood it was five board. We have a 5-member publicly elected board. They have a 7-member publicly elected board. But that there was going to be a weighting to the voting to ensure that everything was essentially equal. There's, with any board structure, you can weight or you can structure board voting to ensure that everything stays equal. That's my understanding. I wasn't part of the conversations. I haven't been involved in the process. But I do have the faith that our executive
thank team. You. I didn't appreciate we were dealing with Alice in Wonderland. Yeah. Seven votes didn't count anymore.
Could we
five.
Take a question in some other area? Of healthcare. Pat.
This is a question for both of you. What do you see is the role of consensus in board deliberations?
I think a healthy board has a diversity of views, and it's okay to have disagreements and different opinions on votes. But I think it is incredibly healthy to work towards consensus, to try to find solutions that all the board members feel good about. I think that's the best way to move forward. I'm a big believer in consensus building. It may not be practical at all times, so you may have votes that there are dissenting opinions.
Yeah, we just say I think that dissent is a sign of a healthy board. Obviously, we all want to move forward and step together, but we all have different world experience and professional experience and view the world differently. I would say I'm less concerned about consensus. I'm more concerned about how we resolve differences and to ensure that we're doing so in a professional manner that supports the hospital and the sole employee being the CEO.
Okay, another Rotary member. Scott, did you have a question?
It was asked by Bill.
Okay. Mr. President, any other Rotary questions? Yes.
I guess I've heard a lot today about what the hospital district has done for the community in terms of providing services. What do you see going forward? I mean, I'm wondering that maybe there's a time for a little breath and pause in endeavors, but that's never the case for a public entity. There's always something. What do you see going forward in the next 3 to 5 years with the hospital district, the needs or the desires?
Yeah, so I think that as we look forward, I mean, we've got some simple things on the landscape, not simple, but well-identified things on the landscape, like the expansion with the Imaging and Servicing Center in Port Ludlow. That'll be built out of the old Kitsap Bank building. The mobile dental clinic is going to be scaled up and rolling more. And I think the hospital wants to continue to meet the needs of the community. They're also continuing to staff the new hospital building and bringing more additional services. Other areas that I think the hospital can look, I know that rehab has been one that's come up a lot as I've been talking to the community. It's a challenging area for the hospital, but it might behoove the hospital to at least look at what are the barriers that we're not, if we have that much demand, why are we not having private practitioners solving that in our community? And is that the hospital's role or somebody else's? I'd say largely we're gonna be challenged in what the financial landscape looks like, and we're gonna have to consider priority setting if our financial landscape gets more challenged, which I believe it will be.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing in the immediate future is the impact of the massive tax bill that is going to cut, that is going to severely cut healthcare funding. So we're going to have to look at that in for the next year when the cuts start to take place and see how bad that impacts our bottom line. So that's the first stressor. We are continuously, it's our job to assess the healthcare needs of the community and see if we need to expand services or change them in any way. And there's already talk about another, just the beginnings of talks about another construction project. So that is also something that's on the horizon.
Could I just follow up? So speaking of funding, is there any projection at this point about how that funding change will affect Jefferson Healthcare?
The estimate that the CEO gave was that at a minimum of about $250,000 a year, less funding, but potentially an increase of like $1 to $2 million a year of charity care that we'd have to do. And also just massive stress on our Medicaid community having to jump through many more bureaucratic hoops to stay on Medicare. And so we'll be spending money to try to help our community know about that and stay on top of it.
Yeah, I'd say that's the big piece is going to be access and coverage. The projection's about 3,000 people in our community losing Medicaid. The hospital is still going to need to care for those patients, which means that the expense is still there, but the revenue is not. Our charity care, we have one of the best charity care programs in the state, which I think is extremely commendable, and it drives access for our community. Last year, we spent $9.2 million on it. On an annualized basis, based on August, we're going to be at $12.5 million this year, which is a quite substantial growth, and that's prior to the impact. So, this is going to be, I think, charity care and bad debt forgiveness is going to be an issue that the board is going to have to figure out how to address if funding becomes tight, because that is a critical piece of how we drive access for our community.
Okay. Case, you have a question?
Yeah. Since currently property taxes from people in Jefferson County provide about $500,000 per year of revenue, which is less than one day's operation of the hospital district, would you be in favor of considering raising the levy lid in order to provide an additional, perhaps $3 million to help cover some of the required charity costs? Currently, I pay per year for my property taxes $48 a year in order to have access to a full service 24/7 emergency room.
Yeah, so I would say I generally am not in favor of raising taxes. All of that being said, so our tax revenue last year was $530,000. We're the second lowest taxing district, public hospital district in the state of Washington, and well below all of our peers. I'm not in favor of raising taxes for construction projects and things like that. I see charity care as being one of the areas where if that's the only way that we can fill that gap to continue access to our community, then that's probably a conversation that's worth having.
Yeah, we often say we only get $500,000 a year of tax money, but like 70% of our patients are Medicare and Medicaid, which is all tax funded. So, you know, I mean, I'm open to, if the board wanted to discuss changing the tax basis, I would be open to discuss that. But I think the big picture is that our entire healthcare system is an inefficient bureaucratic mess, and that's why I favor, you know, big reform such as single payer healthcare, so that we can streamline as a nation our healthcare costs and make it make a little bit more sense. And I'd also be really open to some sort of regional single payer healthcare solution if we could get it together and accomplish that. But those kind of reforms and goals seem a far way off with the way our current legislators work together.
Thank you. Other questions from other folks? Yes, sir.
Well, I keep on rephrasing this question in my head. I initially came in wondering about coziness with the CEO and what it means when a candidate for the board's wife was the chief financial officer. So that was a concern of mine. But as I've sat here, I keep on hearing we. And I say specifically to you, Stu, you keep on talking about we as though you're a part of the hospital and you're already on the board. And that makes me really uncomfortable in terms of some kind of critical distance. Also, there seems to be an acceptance that somehow that there's this fact that somehow Matt didn't know, and I'm saying this to both of you, that the 7 and 5 wasn't really what people conceived. So therefore, Matt was obviously left out of the discussion. That's the only way I can make sense of this. So then the question is, was Matt left out of the discussion because he was a whistleblower? And if so, are we kind of experiencing a community shunning? So all of these questions are going on in my head, and I would appreciate if both of you would address them.
Yeah, it sounds like you have two questions.
Well, yes.
One we've already talked about, which is the supermajority issue.
Well, except I don't feel satisfied by the answer, obviously, so I'm asking it again.
A lot of people don't.
It's not because of a lack of intelligence, it's because I don't hear an answer that's satisfying. What I hear is an answer that is coming from people who are on the board, who are, of course, going to defend their position.
Right.
So, could I interject for one second?
Yeah.
I don't think that's a fair question for Stu, because he's not on the board, and he doesn't know what happened. I think your question is a fair question for those of us who are currently on the board, but that's really not what this forum is for. This forum is for you to try to make a decision as to which one would be the better candidate. So I think your first question is appropriate. Your second question is one that you should take to the current board so that you can hear from Bruce McComas, Mari Bressler, myself, and Jill Buehler, because we're the ones who have the disagreement with Matt in terms of what happened and how it happened. And I'd be happy to talk to you afterwards about that to help you facilitate an answer to your question. But I think for the purposes of this forum, your first question is appropriate, but not the second.
Can we get to the first question?
Well,
excuse me,
but it seems to be totally outrageous that a member of the hospital board would now tell me what is appropriate and not appropriate to ask the candidates.
I understand.
That's ridiculous.
I understand.
That is patently ridiculous.
I understand what you're asking and what you're saying. Can we just take the first question?
Yeah.
Do you remember what it was?
Yeah.
Coziness.
Yeah. No. So
coziness with the board.
Yeah. No. I think that's a fair question. And it's a good observation, and it's something I probably need to watch in my delivery. I've been obviously around Jefferson Healthcare, and it's important to my family, and I feel that I've got a deeply vested interest in the health. I also am running for the position to be on the board, and I very much see myself acting in that role. Not yet, but to come. And so, your point is well taken. I don't want to give the appearance of coziness, because that's not there. I could say that I've got I know the executive team. I don't have a deep relationship with them. My wife's experience and relationship is not my own. And she's also been gone for 5 years. And chose to make a career decision to go somewhere else. So I think it's a keen observation. I think it's a good point. I think it's something that I need to be mindful of, and I appreciate you raising it today.
Is there another different kind of question?
Somebody's not
going to
answer this.
I'm happy to address the second one.
Go
just
ahead.
For a second.
Go ahead.
My question was is why Matt continues to address the 5 and 7 member board when, not in the beginning, but now where the board has come out and the leader with an editorial addressing it, and at the last two board meetings has addressed it. I'm approaching this as a public, a member of the public. My information is limited to what everybody else's is here. But I do attend the board meetings, and I read the leader, and I read everything that comes out. And so that's what my question was around, is why the messaging's continued when it appears from my perspective that the board has addressed this issue head on multiple times. That's where I was getting at. I don't know what happened at the board level. I don't know what Matt was a participant in or not, and I don't want to make any assumptions there. So I just want to clarify from my perspective around my question.
Okay, we're almost at an end here. Do you have something with that, Matt, that you can add quickly to that? We have one more question after this.
So when I blew the whistle, it was based on what the information I was given, which was a document that said 7 and 5 and had no indication of any other decision-making process. the fact that they've come out saying they had some backroom discussions where they modified it is like meaningless to me. I didn't have that information. I wasn't involved. What validity could those backroom discussions have had? They weren't, we didn't agree on it. We weren't told them. So anyways, so thank you for your questions. I agree they were important.
Am I allowed to make one comment?
No. Bruce has a question.
My question is it ever okay to disclose confidential information to the public?
Absolutely. If there is illegal action taken in executive session, your oath is to the Constitution. Obey the executive session rules regardless of whether wrongdoing occurs there. I was put in a position of either participate in what it seemed like a fraud, deceiving the public, and obey executive session rules, or break executive session rules, and I had to search my heart to see what was the right thing to do.
Steve, what's your answer to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's times that are appropriate, but I would want to, if I was given confidential information in executive session, I would want to make darn sure that I knew that the executive session was invalid. And then what I would probably do is go to, the board has a legal resource that's available to them of attorneys and through the state, and they weigh in on matters like this. And I think that would be the next logical step before going forward, would be to determine whether it was appropriate to bring forward that confidential information and how what the implications of doing so from an executive session, because executive session is still executive session.
But attorneys do disagree on what crosses the line.
They do, but that's where I think half of the information you're going to get from the state, and I forget the acronym, it's like MCRS.
MRSC.
Yeah, thank you. They work with the state and are probably some of the best attorneys in tune with the issues. And it's probably more appropriate to go there than to an outside attorney.
Okay. Thank you to the two of you for your time and for coming today. That's it. So we didn't start late. We have regular
meetings. For those people who bought raffle tickets, stick around. Who's the raffle master?